Konnichiwa!
This is Brett, and welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Today's November 11th, 2012. Today on the show, Lorette Lynn. Lorette has been a guest on the podcast several times in the past, but today she is back to discuss her new book, Don't Do Drugs, Stay Out of School. Lorette is going to be starting a new podcast, I think, at the beginning of 2013. But for now, she is promoting this book, and it is a very succinct, compact, user-friendly introduction to a lot of the subject matter that we explore on this show. So it would be the perfect thing to hand off to, you know, somebody who might be curious about some of this stuff, but generally uninformed. And today's podcast, well, we talk about the introductory value of the book. We also hopefully do enough elaboration to keep the veterans in the audience engaged and entertained. So I hope you enjoy this discussion, and I hope you'll consider passing it along to maybe that friend of yours, a new parent perhaps, who might just be dipping them toes into some of these ideas for the first time. And if you are that person, listening to this at the urging of a friend, welcome. Brace yourself. And for those of you who've been around for a while, just a quick note before we start today. This is the full show from Thursday. I had a little bit of difficulty with the recording process that I usually use, so today's podcast does include all of the music beds and segment introductions. And I know that breaks up the flow of the show a little bit. I've been editing all that stuff out, but I couldn't do that this time because I couldn't work around the music beds. But hopefully I can have that problem solved by next week. Also, if you don't mind, please follow us on Twitter. School Sucks Show is our Twitter name. And like us on Facebook. In fact, you can go to schoolsucksproject.com. And right there, all in a row, 1, 2, 3, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and if you have the means and you're interested in getting some additional content, you can sign up to be a member of our AV Club, which is the bonus content section of the new website. But most importantly, it provides the support I need monetarily to keep this show going. Right now we have, I think at last count, 97 people, and my goal is 150, which is roughly 3% of our regular listening audience. Those are the best things that you can do to help this show keep growing. And we've grown a lot over the last couple months. Also, subscribe to us on YouTube. School Sucks Podcast is our YouTube channel. Here's another thing. Four things. 1, 2, 3. Four things you can do. Thank you so much. Here's that show.
There are a lot of very fine first-rate minds in here. But by my experience in this building, none of you have ever been taught the tools by which your mind can work easier on the information you get from the outside world. We concentrate on ideas and the structure of how people think. So memorizing things and writing it down on a test never happens in here at all. It doesn't happen once. You may have tests, but they won't have anything to do with paper and pencil. And you begin to understand how to use these tools, you will have taken a giant step forward to being a powerful, independent human being.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast. Live, I should say, because this is happening right now. With me in the studio, Osborne, how you doing?
I am doing well. How the hell are you, sir?
I'm great. It's great to be back. It's been a busy week.
It has.
You know,
did you stay up all night watching the election results the other night?
Nope. I turned on the TV for 5 minutes and I said, I've had enough. And I turned it off. It was terrible.
I was angry to discover none of my shows were on.
Yeah. You know what I was thinking about today? I was on Facebook. Do you think we should have new names, like new liberty names, like people get, like everyone is a Freeman?
You know, before that became the trend, I had thought about changing my name to Freeborn.
Freeborn?
Yeah, instead of Osborne.
Ah.
And then everyone else started doing that, and then it seemed really dumb.
Wow. I want to be, but I don't want to have anything that implies freedom, liberty, libertarian in my name.
Right.
I just want a new name, a new alt. And I should have thought of this when I started School Sucks Podcast 3 years ago, I think.
Hmm.
Because, boy, when you do something called School Sucks Podcast and people do a Google search for you and Anarchast with Jeff Berwick comes up, not good if you're like, you know, trying to make new business relationships.
That's a good point, sir.
I'm thinking about Butterfield. What do you think of that? Just one name, just Butterfield.
I've known a Butterfield, and that brings up bad memories.
All right. Well, so, I'll back to the drawing board on that. So
now my rapper name is Touchmaster J.
Oh, I like that. That's yeah. really nice. I don't have a rapper name. I do have like a 1950s blues alter ego. His name is Sweet Honey Mustard Brown.
All right. Right.
So that could just be my new Facebook and podcasting name.
Sure.
So I think I would need a better voice for that. So yeah, you're right. About Tuesday, terrible day. And it really made me feel alone in the world. You know?
How so?
Well, I mean, 100 million people voted for Robamney.
Yes, I also felt a feeling of despair. And it wasn't because of anything that's going to happen with the government. Just that I know now when I walk down the street, most of the people I look at and come into contact with voted for one of those clowns.
That's true. I mean, 100 million people, that's most adults.
Yeah.
But, you know, Chris Matthews, one of my favorite television idiots, had this moment last night, and this was kind of accidental, I think, on his part, but he's talking about how proud he is. He jibber jabbers for about, you know, a minute or so.
He does that a lot.
Right. But then he has this gem. This is after it's been called for Obama.
Good work for him. A good day for America. I'm so glad we had that storm last week.
Wow.
Yeah. How about that?
What a sicko.
Yeah. Now he's with, who's the other one? Maddow?
Yeah.
And she kind of goes, you know, like, you crazy, violent, nitwit, a-hole. Like, how could you say it? And he's like, no. Not because people, like, politically, not in the sense of hurting people. Like, there's a difference. Like, but I thought this was, like, the greatest statement about politics ever.
Yeah, it sums it all up.
I'm glad I got what I want by something bad happening to other people.
Yeah, that's all politics is.
I thought that was beautiful. You know, we're not going to talk about the election because we want to do a productive show. Mm. And we have a fantastic guest. My audience knows her because she's been on the show several times before. Laurette Lynn, the Unplugged Mom. Laurette, how you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic. And I'm a little sad because I wanted to talk about the election a little bit.
All right, let's do it.
I love being on this program. I love working with you. I think it's great that when you say Brett and Laurette, it really works. And right. I love making trouble with you, Brett. So,
well, then you should have an opportunity to vent a little bit about the election.
You are in the driver's seat, ma'am.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just got to vent a little,
sure.
Brett, because this so many things tie together. First of all, please, you didn't vote, right?
Nope.
Before I go there. Okay. This is actually the first election where I didn't vote at all. The last election, I didn't vote for president, but I did at least go and I voted on local legislation and things that were going on in the community. But I actually stayed away from the voting booth completely this mm-hmm. election. So who's ever been trying to talk me into that for the last year and a half? And I've been really resistant. You win. I didn't do it. I couldn't go. Chris Matthews, you know, I watched Chris Matthews. I watched the Democratic pundits and I've been listening to the Republican pundits. And I, you know, the next morning, the morning after, of course, Neil Borth was about to have an aneurysm. I thought he was going to kill himself live on the air. And it's like a calamity to me. But at the same time, I don't have that same feeling of dread or that feeling of hopelessness because it's almost like I was prepared for it. I knew it. I woke up in the morning. I didn't know what was going on the night before. I didn't care. And this is the first time since I've been eligible to vote, since I've been 18 years old, that I actually didn't care. I always cared. And when I woke up in the morning and when I turned on the computer, I saw that Obama won and I said, ugh. And then I realized I would have said, ugh, either way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I was kind of deflated. And, you know, you're seeing all these conversations going on in the social blogosphere and everything else. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, it is what it is. But I almost feel sad for myself that I don't feel more desperate, that I don't feel more hopeless, because I think it's even more sad that I'm almost at the point where I just accepted that this is life. But here's the thing, Brett, and I think you already know this. I think the reason why we're in the position we're in is because people don't know any better. They're lacking the understanding of the process and what it really does. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to a really bad education. So that's the segue.
Or really good schooling, which is one of the most important distinctions, I think, for us to make. Osborne, we talk about that on this show all the time. You know, whenever we talk about moving away from the compulsory education system, but it's I just did it. The compulsory schooling system, we are always met with this, well, how would people be educated? They're two very, very different things. And Lorette,
well, people are not getting educated in school. I have great respect for education, and I think education would be something that everybody would seek, that people naturally seek. Children naturally seek education because they want to learn about their world. The opposite is happening in school, though. People aren't being educated in school. They're not seeking an education in school. They're being programmed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, this is a result. This is the fact that these two idiots were the only two clowns we had to choose from. That's the result of institutionalized schooling.
Yeah. And you were really helpful. Something you said to me a few months back when you said, I won't even use the word homeschooling or unschooling, right? Because that has nothing to do with education. We got to get away from that word schooling. And again, in your book, the term you use, and the book I'm talking about, which I haven't mentioned yet, I showed a screenshot of it, and I'll put that up again. Don't do drugs. Stay out of school. And home education is the term that's used again and again in the book to make that distinction, which is very important. It's a distinction that we really, really focus on because people just can't seem to pull those two words apart, but that's very important.
Yeah, I don't use the word homeschooling to describe what we do as a family. I don't use the word unschooling, and I don't use the word professionally either in the work that I do. I always use the word home education or family-based learning or something of the sort. I try to mix it up a little bit because the point is that I think as soon as we name it and call it a thing, which we've already done. I mean, homeschooling has already been a word for a very long time, but I personally try to steer away from that because by making it a thing, then we validate the system as the standard.
This is School Sucks Live. We are on our way with Lorette Lynn and Osborne, and we will be back in a minute. Give us a call, 843-JOIN-SSP. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. This is Brett. In the studio with me tonight, we have Osborne. And on the phone, Lorette Lynn. Thanks for being here, Lorette. Your new book, Don't Do Drugs, Stay Out of School. Can you tell us a little bit about what pushed you to write this book?
Yeah, actually, I was doing a show for Unplugged Mom Radio, and this was way back when the show first started, in the very early stages of the show. And I got on a rant, and Desiree, my producer, was on with me. And I think we just finished up with the guest. We were just talking a little bit, and I went on, and it just came out. I just blurted out the phrase. I said, you know what, folks, here's my advice. Here's my advice to you. What you need to do is just stay out of school. Just stay away from school. And I stopped and I said, as a matter of fact, don't do drugs, stay out of school, because I was thinking of the cliche, you know, don't do drugs, stay in school. And Desiree started laughing. I got so much feedback from that, like almost immediate feedback. People were loving it. They thought it was hilarious and funny. And then a few shows later, someone repeated it back to me and we started laughing again. And it just became a thing all by itself. So I had written a couple of articles, and it was actually Desiree that said, you know what, you should write a book. And I said, yeah, whatever. What would I call it? And she said, don't do drugs, stay out of school. And I thought it was so goofy at first. I said, nah, that's silly. But it stayed on my mind for a while. And what I decided to do at some point was take a few of my articles and put them together. But the first idea was just kind of to create this kind of long article and sell it out online and put it out online and, you know, print it in different magazines and such. But as I was putting it together, it was getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the outline was getting bigger. And before you know it, I had the outline for a reasonably sized book. And I just went ahead with that. It took a while because I have a household to run mm-hmm. at the same time, but it got done. And I meant it to be just a very simple, easy to read, prolific message, like one parent talking to another parent and saying, look, I don't think we should use school anymore. Here's why. Here's what the problem is. Here's what the potential harm can be to your children. Here's what I found out. Here's what you should go and look for yourself. And here are some possible solutions for you. And I think that I've been able to accomplish that with this book.
And you've tested this yourself, because there was a time, I know from our conversations before, where you had your children were young and you went to interview the school teacher, or was it preschool, elementary school? I'm not sure.
Elementary school. Several schools, actually, I interviewed.
Yeah. And Osborne, you've got two young kids yourself that are probably not going to wind up in these public schools.
Absolutely not.
Right.
I would hope not.
One is two, one is five, right?
Yeah,
or almost six.
And, and they started educating themselves as soon as they popped out of the hole.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, back to the book. The book is compact. You know, I know it expanded beyond what could be an article. It's user friendly. It's to the point. It's set up in a way where about the first half of the book makes the case against compulsory schooling and socio-philosophical was the term you used, consequences.
Yeah.
And then the second half of the book is pretty much focused on solutions, which is what we hope to deal with more on this show in the future. I certainly made a very thorough case through, you know, over 100 episodes on why people shouldn't be sending their children to these schools. But, you know, in that part where you're making the case against school, you know, you mentioned Gatto, you mentioned the Prussian system, you mentioned the industrialists, like the Rockefeller Education Board and all that. When you were doing this research, and maybe this was stuff you knew before, did you find anything that was particularly shocking or upsetting about the origins of our school system in this country?
It was all shocking when I first found it out, because remember, Brett, when I decided to home educate my kids, it wasn't because I thought anything was basically wrong with the whole system in general. I think on some level, I always sensed that because I rebelled against school when I was a kid naturally, but I think a lot of kids do. Now, hindsight teaches me that the reason kids rebel naturally is because it's this instinctual rebellion against being suppressed. But at the time, I thought I was just a rebellious kid. My decision was primarily based on the fact that the New York City public schools, which is where I lived at the time, were simply not going to work for my family. I felt that after going and interviewing several of the schools, my first clue was just the fact that I was interviewing them was a problem. It was so shocking that I would sit down and ask all these questions. And I said, why is this uncommon? Why is this a problem? So that was the first red flag. But my decision was primarily based on that very narrow kind of reasoning. Well, it's the New York City schools and they're overcrowded. You know, the main thing that you would hear on mainstream, and they're not doing very well. Statistically, they're low. I want something better for my kids. So you want something done right, you do it yourself. Yeah. I decided that I was going to do it myself. When I started reading about home education, and the first books I started with were just logistically how to put it together. Linda Dobson, you know, provides great material for that. Like if you're new to home educating, what do I do? How do I do this? Linda Dobson. She kind of, in her books, she very softly introduces the idea that there is something terribly wrong with the school system and that education does not actually happen in school, but she introduces it much more softly than, say, Gatto. Once I got through that, I continued to read because learning is an ongoing process, of course, and I became more and more interested. Then my political view started to change. A lot of things in the world started to change. I started to find out more about just the economy, life in general, politics. Then the door started opening up even more as far as education. I started to read Gatto. Once I started to read Gatto, and then I was reading Charlotte Iserby, and I'm sure you've read Charlotte Iserby, The Deliberate Dumbing Down of America. These things, I mean, they were all shocking. I don't know that I could pick one in particular, but in general, it was a hard pill to swallow to realize that it's on purpose. Not only is it happening, but it's not inadvertent. It's on purpose. There was a very purposeful agenda to program and condition large quantities of people and mold them for specific tasks in life. Like we heard from President Wilson, which I mentioned in my book, he made it very clear in a very well-documented, easy-to-verify speech where they literally want to train people to fit into certain areas of society. That's shocking in and of itself. Then you have the ways in which they do it. And it's not only through the conditioning of the information that they're giving or a lack of information, because you remember, they are giving children information, but it's controlled, contrived information. It's a different version of history. And you were a history teacher, Brett, so you know that the version of history that the textbooks want to give young people and the version of history that actually happened are typically two different versions. Sure. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Economics and all this information being controlled and contrived, it gives a very particular, paints a very particular picture. But it's also done through medications. And you know from my conversations with Lori Couture, I don't know if you've spoken to her yet, but you know, a lot of these made-up diseases and in some cases the children actually do have these conditions and these problems, but maybe 10% of the time they actually do. 90% of the time they don't. And it's the medication, the education, a lot of different means that, you know, we can get a little bit more into, but the whole thing is shocking, really.
Sure. When we get back, let's pick it up right there with the health risks of government school. This is School Sucks Live. We will be right back. This is us. Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. In the studio with me tonight is Osborne, and out in Oklahoma is Laurette Lynn. And yeah, we're talking about her book, Don't Do Drugs, Stay Out of School. And right before we went to the break, we were talking about, oh, these drugs that they put these kids on, as the title suggests. Mm-hmm. You know, you said, Osborne, that you had a brother who had landed himself in trouble back in the day, right? Was that part of the...
Yeah, which one?
The one we were talking about a couple years ago.
Oh, yes.
Who you said is doing very well now.
Yes.
Did that course of action ever get suggested for him? Or
the drugs? I think he was on the drugs when he was little.
Yeah.
Now, his younger brother, on the other hand, he's been on the drugs for a long time, and it's not good.
It's not going well. Yeah, it usually doesn't, because there are adverse consequences of that. And it seems like such an easy solution, which really doesn't require looking at the institution or the actions of adults. It seems like when adults try to solve problems with young people, the solution can be anything, Laurette, that doesn't require any self-examination whatsoever, whether we're talking about schooling or parenting in many
yes,
cases.
This is an epidemic in today's society. And I'd like to be able to really draw a clear path and maybe come up with some kind of theory and write a thesis on it someday, because it is something that is a topic that I find fascinating and very passionate and interested in. But it does seem to be the nemesis of our modern culture today is we want an easy fix. We want an easy out, and we always want to blame something else. It's never our fault. It's never something that we're doing. And if you suggest that to a parent, if you say, well, maybe the child's acting out behavior has something to do with the parenting. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that both the mother and father are working three different jobs and they're never present and the kid is being raised by the school system. If you suggest that, oh, no, it couldn't possibly be that. And, you know, they'll react sometimes with violent opposition and violent aggression toward you for just suggesting that it might be something that they're doing. And that's very sad, because I'm really not making any kind of profound suggestion that there's anything wrong necessarily with the parent, but just self-examination. We seem as a culture to have this real horrible inability to look in the mirror and really examine ourselves and take true responsibility. Now, I'd like to say that it's because that is what our conditioned and our programming has done to us, but I'd like to find out specifically what about the programming has done that to us and made us so infantile and unable to take responsibility. But one of the things that we do as a culture, and I use the pronoun we loosely because I'm just trying to generalize here to not point specific fingers, but I think we know who we're talking about. Kids are acting out in school. There's 40 kids in the classroom. Teacher can't control them. The easy way is to put them on some kind of medication in order to get them on the medication, which will keep them docile and easier for the teacher to control. In order to get them, we have to tell the parents that there is something wrong with the child. So we make up these conditions and we make up these diseases and we make up these disorders. And like I said, there might be, maybe I'm going to be very generous by saying 10%, but I think it's actually far less than that. Maybe 1% of the time, okay, the child actually does have some kind of legitimate issue that is a physical issue. 99% of the time, there really is no legitimate physical issue there. It's just simply a matter of we need the child to be more docile. But the teachers have convinced themselves that these conditions exist. A lot of the facilitators have convinced themselves, because that's the only way to deal with your conscience, is to convince yourself that this is legitimate. Because somewhere deep inside, the parents, everybody knows that putting a child on a psychotropic medication is dangerous and harmful. But in order to convince themselves that they're doing the right thing so they could just send their child into school and go back to work, they say, well, my child has a condition. That's why they have to be on the drug. Because God forbid they have to look at themselves and examine themselves. And that is a symptom of the same programming that they were brought up in. So all these children now are growing up, Brett. We have a wave of children growing up completely dependent on medication for depression, for oppositional defiance disorder. When I was a kid, oppositional defiance disorder didn't exist. It was called being a kid. Okay, there's a whole world of trouble there. We have this wave of kids that are getting out of high school and entering into the world that they really aren't prepared for, completely dependent on drugs and medication. And the whole thing just perpetuates itself. And, you know, in walks more health problems and more dependency on more drugs and medication and more health problems after that. And then in putting offspring into a whole new generation that's going to do this exact same thing. We're creating a very unhealthy, very dangerous cycle here. And it's just another problem that's happening. And that is more what my title means. It doesn't mean don't use marijuana. It means stay away from the psychotropic drugs that are harming your children in school. And these are the ways that school is physically harmful, mentally harmful, spiritually harmful.
Yeah. One of the saddest things that I remember hearing, I was at a conference for gifted, which is another label that I'm not really in love with today, but for gifted students. And they were showing us, like, you know, here would be a list of attributes that a gifted student would possess. It was exactly the same list that shows up in the DSM-4 for ADHD. So you have kids who might be talented or even have these learning styles that don't fit the mold of the, you know, the strict government school environment, that are doped up into compliance and, you know, see those gifts or those talents, those things that make them unique, those things that make them individuals, as more of a liability, or something is wrong with me because I don't fit into this expectation that was created long ago without me in mind at all. And I think that, you know, while we're talking about that health risks of this whole schooling process, there's also a bright side to this if we start talking about home education, and that's the health rewards, right? And you talk about this later on in the book when you get into solutions, but kids can, you know, get back into their natural rhythm. First of all, they're not eating poison, they're not being drugged by school psychologists, but they can also start living more naturally, right?
They're not being dragged out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, their natural rhythm isn't being interrupted. Kids can sleep later, and notoriously, home educating families do allow more sleep time because there's no reason to drag ourselves out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, to rush off to catch a school bus to get there and not really start studying on anything until hours later anyway. So our natural rhythms aren't interrupted. We can eat when we're actually hungry. We can sleep when we're tired. And I'm using the pronoun we because in my family, home education is a complete lifestyle for the whole family. It's not just something that, you know, I sit my kids in a room for 6 hours a day. That's not really how it works. So you have a healthier environment in that way. And a lot of parents are starting to pull their kids out of school because these are the parents that are realizing that something is not right about medicating, and they don't think anything's wrong with their children, and they don't want to medicate their children. So they put them out of school, pull them out of school, and they have them at home without any medications at all. And a lot of parents are finding that this really is the solution to their supposed ADD problems or oppositional defiance disorders or whatever it is. Simply remove them from the environment that's making them behave in these odd ways, and then we don't have these issues anymore. Also, parents whose children are on medications and they're still not doing well are pulling them out of the school system. And I hear case after case of this, where they say, after a few weeks, we didn't even need the medication anymore. And then I realized that it was all made up anyway. It was all a farce. It was all a scam. And of course, these parents have, you know, they have come to the point where they've looked at themselves in the mirror and they had to realize that they've done something. But it means that progress is happening. And like we were talking before about that feeling of dread, that feeling of despair, because we're still walking around with one of these two clowns for presidents. We know that this is where the hope lies, seeing more and more families pull out of the system, and all the people that we've reached, Brett, you and I, that call us up or write and say, you've convinced me, we're not using school. That is where the hope lies, because that means those children are going to grow up healthier, smarter, and able to contribute better things to society on the whole.
Excellent. We're going to talk a little bit more about health, but a different kind of health, when we come back in just a minute. School Sucks Live. We'll take your calls, 843, join SSP. All right, so this is our last segment of Hour 1. Like I said before, we would take some calls, 843-JOIN-SSP. You could Skype in School Sucks Live. I'll try to bring you into the conversation, especially if you have questions for Lorette or about her book, which is what we're building tonight's show around. The title of that book is Don't Do Drugs, Stay Out of School. And Lorette, you said 10% discount for my listeners?
Yes, 10% for your listeners on the paperback or the ebook, whichever they decide. Of course, I will autograph all of the hard copies.
So. Awesome. And I think, you know, one of my favorite books is Underground History of American Education by John Taylor Gatto. Mm-hmm. But if you gave it to somebody as an introduction, they would get to page 6, throw it on the ground, and run away crying.
It's very large.
Yeah. So Lorette's book is, it's like 100 pages, I think. Exactly.
100 pages, yeah.
You know, plus a foreword, plus a preface. Hmm. But very manageable, very not intimidating like Underground History of American Education. Maybe Underground History of American Education would be a good book, too. But I think this provides a really good introduction, something that you could, you know, hand to a parent and say, you know, really framing it around what we were talking about in the last segment. How concerned are you about the health of your children? Because even for these most obvious reasons that we've talked about, as far as drugging, the disgusting food, the unnatural sleep cycles, I think there's also a sort of emotional and psychological health and really healthy relationships, I would say. Like, how well could a parent really know their child if that child is taken away for 35 hours a week, and then when they get home, they're exhausted and they have to do homework, and they probably would just want like a little bit of privacy. Plus, what kind of attitude are they forming towards what they perceive as authorities? So I think it could strain or even poison, what could otherwise be, through home education, a very healthy parent-child relationship, which unfortunately is... And it probably contributes to some of the other problems we talked about at the beginning of the show, relatively rare in our society. And one of the things that has happened really in the last century is parents have become, usually as products of the same system themselves, apologists for school, right? Yeah. So if there is that natural response to a coercive environment, the parent feels obligated to take the side of the coercive environment.
Yes. It's Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. Do you...
You fall in love with your punisher.
Do you try to counsel people on this at all? Does anyone ever ask you for advice on this stuff? Or like...
Personally, yeah. I have not offered that professionally, only because I can't possibly fit that into my schedule right now. But among my friends sometimes somebody will email and I'll get into it a little bit as much as I can. But yes, that does happen, where there'll be this vehement defense of the school system. And sometimes I think that they're making an excuse for themselves. Like we talked about before, they want to clear their own conscience. Like somewhere deep inside, they know that the school system is not healthy. Their child isn't really thriving within the school environment, but they want to make excuses and they want to clear their own conscience. So they'll defend it and say, oh, but they have a great sports program. Oh, but, you know, they have a great math program or whatever other excuse there is. The most common one, and I do cover this in the book as well, is, well, most people turn out okay, so what's the problem? But I always invite people to take a deeper look at that and say, well, how are we defining okay? What is okay? And I want to go back to something you mentioned before, Brett, and let's really break this down as far as the harm that it does to a Sure. child's health, physically, mentally, spiritually, all three aspects of what makes a person a whole person. It really works on all the three of those aspects, and a lot of it is done on purpose. Just for instance, the drugs. You're putting a child as young as 4 or 5, 6 years old, 4 years old, okay, with a diagnosis of depression. Think about that. A four-year-old with depression, being diagnosed with depression and being put on some kind of medication that is going to alter their brain chemistry. Now they have to stay on this medication. Or you have 8 or 9 year olds being put on oppositional defiance disorder medication because they are oppositional, because they are challenging their teacher. Maybe they're bored. Maybe they are smart, which most people are born with an ability to be educated or an ability to learn or educate themselves, and that's suppressed later on. But at 8, 9 years old, it's still there. It's still present. It's still natural. And they're bored to tears in school because the teacher has to teach the medium. The teacher has to teach to the whole class. And if some of the kids are slower, we have to dumb it down a little bit. And again, they're learning contrived information. So the kid that's bored to death and is doodling and looking out the window and not paying attention, well, that kid's being oppositional. Or the kid that has a problem with something the teacher said and said, wait a minute, I don't understand. And says, you just said so-and-so, and now, and that kid, oh, well, now you're being contrary. So we don't want to teach them to challenge authority. We want to teach them to conform and be obedient and just submit to authority because they're supposed to be subjugated. We're supposed to feel that. So now this child is put on vacation. What it teaches them is that they can't exist without medication. The child is being told there's something wrong with you and you cannot handle your own emotions or your own feelings without medication. If you challenge authority, there's something wrong with you. If you are curious about something, there's something wrong with you. If you are too smart and that's what is making you bored in class, there's something wrong with you. So you have to just slow yourself down. Now this child gets to be 14, 15 years old and hormones are going strong and they're a teenager and things are happening to their body and they're feeling a little emotional and they're thinking, well, something must be wrong with me. In comes illegal drugs. And now we can have a whole other political discussion about whether it should be illegal. But the point is, in comes more hardcore street dangerous drugs that can be very dangerous for them.
Right.
And they think this is perfectly normal because, hey, I need drugs to handle my own life. Right. So they're mentally disturbed. They're physically unhealthy and they're completely emotionally unbalanced. And it has also taught them that challenging any kind of authority is wrong. So they comply and they submit and voila, programming.
Yeah, you know, at some point in the book, it was interesting, and it's kind of haunting, too, that you asked this question, will the, you know, this idea, this fear that you're talking about in people, will the entire system or structure crumble if compulsory schooling went away?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of times when people get trapped into these fear-based retaliation from other people, they say, wait a minute. No, nothing's going to collapse. It'll be okay. We could do this. We could do that. And the next sentence in the book was, maybe it will. You know, but when you think about how entirely unhealthy almost every aspect of our society is, and that's okay and fine— Yeah, this schooling system and the standard practices, I think, sadly, in parenting, prop everything else up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, Brett, it's like looking at a building and saying, well, this building is not structurally sound. It's dangerous. It's infested with rats. There's poison in there. The roof is going to cave in. Beams are falling down. Nobody can go near it. It's very dangerous. So someone comes along and suggests, okay, well, let it crumble, bulldoze the thing. And it's like people panic and saying, oh, no, we can't do that. What would we do? The building would exist. And it's like, but it's not working. What, you know? So it really is this strange fear that people have. What will happen to all the children? But think about it. You know where that fear is coming from, because that's what they're asking. And people will even say, Brett, well, we know that it's terrible because it's mainstream news. Everybody knows that the American school system is just not doing well.
Yeah.
I mean, children are graduating. They can't read. So what you and I know and what you and I talk about is we're taking it to a deeper level, and we're asking people to take an even deeper look at the compliance issues and the psychotic issues. And I know you talked about psychosis on one of your shows. We're talking about that. But even on just the surface level, even on just like, you know, the Chris Matthews level,
right,
we know that the schools aren't really doing so good academically anyway. And yet when we talk about changing it, or we talk about pulling children out of school, people like wig out. They start going, oh, what will happen to all the children? Oh my God, everything's going to collapse. And you're thinking, wow, we have really grown dependent on this system as a society. It really has become the backbone of our existence. And I'm trying to make people understand it's the bane of our existence, what it really is. But people are panicking, Brett, not because they're afraid their children aren't going to learn. They need a babysitter.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, and to complicate your analogy just a little bit, you know, there are some huge beneficiaries of this crumbling building infested with poison and rats. And we'll touch on that a little bit when we get back in hour two. You can join us, 843-JOIN-SSP, School Sucks Live, if you want to Skype us. We'll be back in about 8 minutes. We've got a lot more to talk about with Laurette Lynn. This is School Sucks Live.
You will have taken a giant step forward to being a powerful, independent human being.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett, and welcome to Hour 2 of School Sucks Live. Osborne in the studio here with me. How you doing?
I'm doing well still.
Yeah, and on the phone, Laurette Lynn. And can you hear us okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Do you have me?
Yep, we're still going, at least on Ustream. We might have some technical difficulties, but we're still doing a show.
Okay.
So where do we leave off? The guy who keeps track of where we left off is off tonight.
We were talking about drugs.
We were talking about drugs.
And you said when we come back, we're going to talk about a different kind of health.
That was two segments ago, sir.
Was it?
Yeah.
Maybe I checked out.
Yes,
I was waiting for the restroom.
I apologize, Brett. 10%. I just want to mention real quick to anybody that does want to get 10% off on the book. The coupon code is SSP for School Sucks Podcast, and it's available at my website. So you need to use the SSP coupon code for the 10% off.
And you're using the website laurettelynn.com now, right?
Laurettelynn.com. Yeah. When we do a show, there'll be a website for the show, but everything's going to be announced in January, and you can just subscribe to laurettelynn.com. You'll get all the news that you need to get on there.
All right. Excellent. What we were talking about is who benefits, right? The age-old question that is so important. And there are a lot of beneficiaries of what really has become, to quote from the movie, a war on kids, because it's such an easy war to wage. Kids are basically politically defenseless, in many cases physically defenseless in the way that the school is set up, legally defenseless. In most of these relationships, they're defenseless. So kids have become really in the last 20 years, and I want to credit the work of Mike Mayles, who's done a lot of great writing on this subject long before the movie The War on Kids, Kevin Solig put out a couple years ago. Obviously, we have the schools that benefit and the teachers' unions and that bureaucracy. And really, it seems like a lot of the things that the unions do are actually about, you know, exploiting the capture of these children, trying to make the school day longer. They're talking in some places now about extending or making public kindergarten, which would make it mandatory, and even like an after year. So moving school to 14 years. They're, of course, huge beneficiaries in institutions. I was on a podcast last night. We were talking about the institutionalization of children from 1980 to the year 2000 increased by almost 400%. Obviously, the drugs and all of the adults who don't have to do self-examination, who can just push this on the kids. And they try to have these balanced debates about, you know, well, what are liberals saying the problem is? And what do conservatives say the problems are? Let's get both sides of the story.
But one side that is never heard is the kids.
Yeah. So. And you know what, Brett? This whole illusion of political paradigm is also perpetuated by the same school system, because children are taught from a very early age, Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican. So the problems that we're suffering from as a society, socially and politically, all stem from the conditioning that's happening and the programming that's happening to the children. So you have the purposeful programming. And like you were saying before, when you talk about the money, this is really a vicious circle. This is a laundering pit that is happening, supporting the teachers' unions, and the teachers' unions perpetuating the cycle, and then the cycle supporting the teachers' unions, and so far and so forth. And we're using this to justify taxes that we're forcibly collecting from people. And I say the word forcibly collecting instead of stealing, which is what it really is. So these, everybody's paying for taxes, including home educating families. We're supposed to be paying taxes also to the schools. And where what we're really supporting is not the education of the children, but the establishment and perpetuation of the teachers' unions, who also are not really supporting the education of the children. And I get a lot of trouble when I say that. Teachers don't like to hear that, because a lot of them will say, well, hey, I got into teaching because I love kids. You know what? Maybe that's the reason that a lot of teachers get into teaching. But the teachers that don't end up going to the dark side, they have their hands tied, and they really can't help the kids get an education either. And I've had a lot of teachers on my show that have said the same thing. And you were a teacher yourself, Brett. There's only so much you can do. The system actually is not productive or not conducive to an education. So really, it's just unhealthy for children. It's unhealthy for society. It's unhealthy for the political climate. Everything just really goes back to the kids and how they're parented. The fact that we're so dependent and we're not independent, and that we keep passing blame. And we talked with Stefan about the Obama phone. And, you know, it's not only that lady. It's a whole epidemic that's going on. It's the Obama phone kind of nation or epidemic that's happening. Is everybody wants something for nothing. Everybody thinks that they're entitled to something. Nobody wants to take responsibility. And again, I'm using these words loosely. I don't mean every individual is like this, because clearly there are those of us that are saying, hey, we need to do something here. But I think the fact that it's so prominent and so infused into our culture today really does go back to a problem with how our children are growing up.
Sure. And just in case anybody doesn't know what the Obama phone is, that is a phone on Commissioner Gordon's desk that calls Obama when there's a problem in Gotham. No, can you just define that for us, so people know what you're talking about and why that's significant here?
There was a video on YouTube. I was introduced to it last week, but it might have been floating around for even longer than that. And it was a woman in Cleveland that was standing outside, you know, holding up an Obama sign in traffic. And she had a group of people with her, but somebody with a camera was interviewing her. And I don't even know who it was that was interviewing her. I just saw the video on YouTube and saying, what are you doing? What are you out here? And she was just using this like really kind of uneducated vernacular.
I got it right here.
Saying, well, yeah, go ahead and play it.
46 seconds.
Yeah.
Obama!
You got Obama phone?
Yes, everybody in Cleveland, low minority, got Obama phone. Keep Obama in president, you know? He gave us a phone.
He gave you a phone?
More.
How did he give you a phone?
You sign up. If you on food stamps, you on Social Security, you got low income, you disability.
Hey, I have a question. Okay, what's wrong with Romney again?
Romney, he sucks. Hey!
Okay.
It was disturbing to me because it was a microcosm of what is going on in our culture and how the voting process is working for us. And basically, this woman is concerned that Romney might take away her free Obama phone, and she wants to support Obama because he's giving away free stuff. So we have to support that. We have to perpetuate that and keep that going. And I don't know that it's particularly her fault or her upbringing or the environment but what created that environment? What is going on in this society? We can't just look at the problem for what it is and say, well, this lady's crazy. What is going on that's producing millions of people this way?
And it wasn't
what
even
is happening.
It wasn't even any different for the other side, because I don't know if the Obama phone is a real thing or just a myth, but
there are Obama phones, and if you have a cell phone, it's in your cellular bill. You're getting charged for it.
Right. Interesting. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You talked about it. So it's driving up the cost for everybody.
Right. It's not free.
Yeah. But on the other side of that argument, when, you know, the conservatives who are really making hay with Obama phone lady, what are they saying? They say, we need Romney to be elected to save us, to save the country from Obama. So save us Mitt Romney. Yeah, that's so ubiquitous, that way of thinking. This is School Sucks Live. We're going to take a quick break and try to sort out a giant technical mess that we're having here, per usual. Give us a call, 843-JOIN-SSP. We'll bring you into the conversation. We'll be right back. The last segment we were talking about, not necessarily the entitlement society, but dependence and more, I would say Osborne, more the authority worship kind of.
There's a lot of that, yeah.
Yeah. And we felt very lonely. I know I did on Tuesday, and I think you guys echoed the same sentiments through this election where, sure, some people expect Obama as a savior, but others expected Matt Romney. Is that his name?
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
This is a philosophical question, one that I went over a little bit. I went into some detail with Stefan, but it's something that has been plaguing my mind recently. When you mentioned people either expected Obama to give them free stuff, or on the other side, they expected Romney to save us from the other side. And like you said, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. We're having the same problem either way. But then we talk about this, and you were a history teacher, am I right?
Yep.
Okay, so you are a student yourself of history, and you've studied history. All throughout history, it seems that this has plagued societies over and over again. And from an anthropological standpoint, I'm wondering if it's simply human nature. Maybe folks like you and I and other folks that feel the same way we do, and we talk about, you know, personal independence and personal responsibility and personal liberty, and even like sliding over into the realm of anarchy, like Stefan talks about. Are we actually the minority? And is that natural? Is that just the way humanity is, that there is just a minority of people that can survive like that, or that even desire to survive like that? Are we not unlike other mammals insofar as we desire a structure in our society? And even if it means that we're at the bottom of that structure, as long as we know where our place is, we feel safe. And again, I'm using the pronoun we, but I don't actually mean you and me. I think people like us, maybe we truly are the minority. Maybe it is human nature to want to be saved. And they call thousands of years ago in Rome, Caesar save us, Caesar do it for us. Were they conditioned to feel that way, or is it just human nature? Because it seems that that's what people do. They get together, they pick a leader, and they say, save us. So are we fighting a losing battle? I mean, or are we ready to evolve as a culture? Is that why there's so many of us that are starting to break out and say, I don't want to live this way anymore? And liberty is becoming a cliche statement, but a very important idea.
I question human beings having a predictable nature, and certainly plenty of money and resources and minds have been poured into the process of making human beings more predictable. But when you consider the human capacity for reason, the understanding of morality and making choices and free will, and I think we've seen a lot of moral and philosophical evolution in our society, even though we're dragging all of these antiquated systems of mystical thinking and authority along with us. I think what you're describing, people who might think like us or do like us, I think we're more visible today because of the technology that's at our fingertips. And throughout most of history, people who thought like this suffered in silence. They were shamed. They were threatened with excommunication if it was a religious thing. So, I mean, I think that the human mind does desire predictability. Certainly children do. They desire structure. They benefit from structure. We benefit from order. Our minds are natural tools to remove contradictions and remove chaos from our thinking process. We want to make sense of the world around us. But I think we've also been subjected to easy answers in that respect. You know, whoever had the biggest rock, or whoever had the biggest sword, or the biggest gun, or the biggest nuke, or they were the ones who were in charge of making that order. And when you use the word anarchy, talking about, you know, Stefan Molyneux and free domain radio, we have lived in thousands of years in complete philosophical anarchy, I would say. And there's been glimmers of hope, you know, in ancient Greece and in the Enlightenment and, you know, with objectivism. But I've said this so many times recently, we live today in this irrational philosophy of German idealism where our minds are not trustworthy tools to make sense out of the world. So we must defer to authorities. So, yeah, I think people do want structure, but they've always, it seems like we've always accepted this BS definition of what it needs to be, some kind of you know, magical authority or the authority of the state. There's nothing wrong with structure. There's nothing wrong with order. There's nothing wrong with governance. But Osborne, that was one of the videos that you worked on, right? Putting the non-aggression principle at the center of society. The video was, yes. It starts with the Ptolemaic system, right?
That's right.
And the analogy is that for so long, they believed that the Earth was the center of the solar system, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of religious stuff at stake here. The church needed to believe that, you know, part of the whole creation story was that the Earth was put at the center of everything,
right?
Because we were the same clowns for thousands of years who thought that the universe was created so we would have a place to live. That fit that story. And all of these astronomers had to continually come up with more complex justifications and mathematical models to keep showing this. When something concrete, philosophical, was put at the center of society instead of authority, then we could have an order. We could have a governance instead of a government. I think that evolution could take place. But people need to recognize the hole that they're in before that can happen.
Well,
I think
it is taking place, and it will continue to take place, right?
Yeah. I mean,
there's only a certain number of people who can deprogram themselves from the programming, right? But every single one of those people will replicate themselves through breeding and through just living a successful life that other people want to emulate.
Yeah.
Right.
So what you're saying is it has spread and it will continue to spread. And I'm seeing that too, which is why I say that there is hope.
Yeah, but when you ask whether we are ready to evolve right now, I think that's a little bit of a wrong way to look at it because, no, we're not going to evolve today or tomorrow or even in my lifetime.
But. Sure. We'll pick that up right there because I think we can take this a little bit further. This is School Sucks Live. Still time for you to join us. 843-JOIN-SSP. We'll be right back.
But man.
Hey everybody, welcome back to School Sucks Live. We have got, what do we got? 2 segments left. That's about 20 minutes of time. That time can be filled with your calls, with your comments in the chat that I will read on this show. In fact, I'm checking right now. And no one has said anything yet. But it's a very active chat. It just seems like people want to have their own discussions.
I'm seeing some questions in the chat.
Oh, you are? Yeah, maybe yours caught up. What do you got?
So Sammy Polizzi wants to know, at what age did you start actively educating your children? I have a 3.5-year, and he's mostly still just learning through living, watching everything I do and helping, etc.
When children are that young, they will absorb most of their understanding of the world on their own. They will look at the world. They're in a discovery stage right now. They're learning about their world. They're in what the trivium would relate to as a grammar stage. They're discovering what everything is. They're looking at it. They're using their 5 senses. They're touching it. They're feeling it. And they're learning. That is how it's going to go for a number of years. As far as actively educating them, that's really, it's kind of loosely defined. And I'm saying that because it's different for every family, it's different for every child, and it needs to be different for every child. So you kind of just pick up on the cues and you see that your child is really just extra curious in numbers and building and engineering concepts or mathematical concepts. So you start to introduce things slowly and, you know, you count the number of Cheerios that they have. That to me is actively educating. educating when you're talking about a 3 or 4 year old, because you're introducing something actual numbers, actual mathematical skills. Now, there are families that really don't introduce that at all because they consider it coercion. I'm a little bit different. I come from a different philosophy, or I've developed different philosophy. I have a great deal of respect for an actual academic education, because I think it's extremely important to the health of the human mind. I'm very into health. I think that we have a responsibility as parents to make sure that our children learn about physical health, learn how to keep themselves physically healthy, emotionally healthy, and intellectually healthy. Because in order to really understand freedom, in order for people to grow up and really understand what it means to be independent, what it means to take responsibility, what it means to love one another, what it means to be an active part of the community without being forced by the government to do so, you need to understand your world. You need to understand history. You need to understand how things work. And that is through intelligence. That is through fostering intelligence through active education. As they get older, they start to pursue that education on their own. And that's when they analyze things. Then they're in some kind of like logic and rhetoric phase where they're discovering, and then they're really analyzing, and then they're repeating it back, which is, you know, what's considered to be rhetoric. And I'm saying this because this is the philosophy that I really go by, an education philosophy that's important to us. So when they're really young, as far as when to start, just follow their cues. You're reading a book with your child, and you know, they're pointing to the words. You know, okay, they're curious about how to sound out this word. So take it a step further. Start teaching them the alphabet. Start letting them recognize A, B, C and putting the words together. If they're not really showing any signs of that, just wait. I would say, though, if they get to be 8 or 9 years old, yeah, it's time to start learning how to read. I don't really go for the whole, well, if they're 12 and they don't know how to read, it's no big deal. It kind of is a big deal in my book, but you have to kind of just follow your own child's cues. There's a flexibility there, and there's never violence. There's never any kind of force or anything like that. There's if you as a parent find that these things are important, your children will naturally go in that direction as well. I hope that answered the question. If not, then keep asking.
Yeah, certainly people can post whatever they want in the chat. If you try to call and you don't get an answer, keep trying. Yeah, I think that the whole thing here is that a child is confident that their mind is a useful and practical tool. We were talking about this in a show recently called Breaking Free, which was based on a book by the same name by Nathaniel Brandon. And, you know, it's these questions that really ask people to go back and look at some of their childhood experiences. But the questions are so applicable to school, which is often, you know, the reinforcement of bad parenting. Or I don't want to say bad parenting, but uninformed parenting, unenlightened parenting, not peaceful parenting. And the first question in the book is, did your parents' manner of behaving and dealing with you give you the impression that the world was rational, predictable, and intelligible, or a world that was bewildering, contradictory, incomprehensible, and unknowable? And I think when, you know, the default understanding for a young person is that the adult world makes sense, authority is rational, even if they can't express it, right? But that's so often so far from the truth, mm-hmm. as we see all the time. So unfortunately, a lot of kids grow up not feeling like their mind is trustworthy, and that they're efficacious intellectually. We're going to take a call from 480. Hold on just 1 second, Lorette. Hello, who's this?
This is Heather.
Okay, Heather, you are on with Lorette.
Oh, wow. Lorette, I just had a question. My husband is the one that found all of you guys, and I really like what you guys are saying and what you guys are all about. But what about teaching children that, you know, that they have to live in the real world and what is acceptable to society, and also, you know, in our world?
I'm sorry, just repeat the last part. I heard the part about the real world, teaching children about the real world, but what was the last part of the question?
Yeah, but also in our world, you know, in our world that we want to create within our home environment, like... Do you guys have any opinions on, we found a public homeschooling that does classes 2 days a week, and they focus more on art and PE and social interaction. And, you know, it's the parent's job to do whatever it is, the 2 or 3 hours a week of education by their criteria, so to speak. And then I figured we could educate ourselves on what we wanted the rest of the talk.
So your question is, how home educators teach the kids about the real world. Am I understanding your question correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, actually I've gotten asked this question before, and it's an understandable question. And, it's not that easy to answer because it demands another question. Okay. And the question is, how do we define the real world? What is our impression of the real world? And automatically, I think people assume that when we send our children to school for 15 years, we are preparing them for the real world. But let's really break that down. Is school the real world? And it's not. They're locked inside of a classroom. They're with the same 30 kids and one adult, and they're usually right around the same age. That doesn't really reflect the real world, so it doesn't really prepare them for it. What it does is prepare them for the processed world, to get out of the school, and that's what they're being trained for. They're being trained to sit in the classroom so that they could prepare to apply to a good college, so they could sit in a classroom for longer, so that they could get a job in an office, so they could sit in a cubicle, and the bigger office that they get and the nicer window that they get, it teaches them that this is an achievement. That, to me, is a replicated world that exists because of programming. But if we think about it, nobody's actually finding true personal happiness or freedom in that environment. So it's really not the real world. The real world is outside of the classroom, existing out there every single day. All we have to do as parents is take our children outside and let them be a part of real life. Let them be a part of our family, an active participant in our family. Let them go out and participate in real life and meet real people and make friends naturally, not under contrived circumstances or forced conditions, but just dealing with people on an everyday basis and meeting people and being friends with people. You mentioned that your local home education group has PE classes and art classes and things. Those are great ways to get out there and do things.
Heather, hold on 1 second. We'll keep you on with us for one more segment. This is School Sucks Live. We will be back in a flash. We might have time for one more call.
For the Free State Project.
Okay, we can all still talk during the break. Heather, are you still there? Okay.
Hi, Heather. I'm usually not a fan of things that are funded by the public school system because I'm very suspicious of why they're offering so many wonderful things to the home education community. In my community here, we take advantage of PE classes and art classes and things, but they're put out specifically by the home education community. There's no funding there.
Okay, yeah, because, see, I've Googled and I've searched. I mean, my kids, they're not even two yet. I've Googled and I've searched, and I can't even find anything that's not religiously affiliated with anything. And, you know, I'm not anti any religion. I just don't necessarily want a structure based on a religion.
Of course.
You know?
We choose secular home education choices, too. Where are you, just out of curiosity? What state?
Arizona.
Okay. All right. There should be some choices. I can look through my resources if you connect with me through my website, and I can send you some resources if I can find them. I can tell you that I'm in Oklahoma, which is about as red as they come as far as states, and it's not easy to find secular choices out there, but they're out there. They're everywhere.
Okay. That's good. We're just trying to prepare. I mean, I personally, I'm not the big supporter of this. My husband is, and we have this kind of a relationship where it's, you know, I stay at home, and the way we make decisions is if it's really important for him, and not, you know, I can't say anything against his choices. That's how we work, you know. And if something's really important for me and his opinion is mild, we kind of go with it. So he wants to keep them at home with me, and that's great because I love spending my time with them, you know. So I have no problem doing it for X amount of more years. But you know what? I'm just kind of like, we can't find anything that's not religious based. We can't find anything that will even let us poke our head in now, you know, to see if that it would fit our family. And also, I'm kind of like, you know, how one of my bigger questions is, how do you have these children who haven't done things, you know? And I understand that the normal way isn't the right way, but how do you, what's the end result when they're, you know, when they're grown and questioning authority in a job where they can't question authority? You know, it's kind of like you go in, you clock in, and that's it. That's the rules.
Well, you know, Heather, what I think you need to take time to do is really examine what your objectives are. Heather, I know that we don't have a lot of time, and you know, but I applaud your question, and I want to let you know that it's a very normal and legitimate question. The more you look into this and the more you read about it, I think that these answers are going to start to come to you, because you're going to start to change your perspective, and you're not going to have the same questions anymore. You're almost going to reject the premise of your own question. So what I'm going to encourage you to do, because we are short on time, or else I would love to spend more time talking to you, is go ahead and get the book, Don't Do Drugs, Stay Out of School. Read through it. That is going to open up a lot of doors for you. And then you can go ahead. I'm going to suggest Linda Dobson to read some of her books, because that's an even better introduction into how to really incorporate education into your home and incorporate real world experience without having to use the school system. So start with Don't Do Drugs, Stay Out of School. Move on to Linda Dobson. And at some point, you might want to check out John Telegato. But like Brett mentioned before, that's a little much to chew on at first. So
right. We're coming back. Heather, do you want to hang with us for some of this segment?
FM. Sure.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Live. This is our last segment of the night, and we're going to do, you and I will do more later, but this is our last segment.
Not done. I'm just getting warm.
I know, I can tell. Yeah. You look very anxious.
Probably because of the music.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just like rock out later in the studio. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Good audio quality in here for rocking. So we still have Lorette. And we also have Heather on the phone, and we chat a lot during the break, and that will all wind up in the podcast. But just for our radio listeners, Lorette and Heather, you were making some suggestions as far as a course of action, Lorette. I just wanted you to have an opportunity to share that with everybody else.
Well, Heather had a legitimate question, and that's about the real world. And I have heard that question before. I actually have a video up on YouTube that answers that exact question. What about the real world and exposing kids to the real world? And what I first try to do is just remind people that the real world is out there. It's out there every day. It's part of the world that we live in. So as far as exposure and preparation, just live, just be, just exist. That is how to prepare for the real world. And I think Heather is also concerned with the child getting older. How are they going to get a job? How are they going to learn to respect authority? You will learn to respect authority when it's more genuine, when you're in a situation where you understand that a mutual respect is something that two human beings have for each other, that's not by force, and that's not under some kind of tyrannical idea. Respect for authority, respect for a boss that you work for, comes from a genuine respect for other human beings. And that comes from just living in a very real, very organic environment that is applicable to home-based learning and home-based education, because it becomes your entire lifestyle. And this is how your children are going to learn values and morals, because you're going to emulate that and you're going to be a big part of their lives, and they will get to know you in ways that they won't get to know you if they're trapped inside of school for 15 years of their lives. In that environment, they will learn by force to obey authority. But in a more natural environment, they will learn just generally a mutual respect. And when you enter into a new situation, such as a job, that person has been there longer, and this is simply the way it works. However, they will also learn that if they are being abused in that situation, they don't have to tolerate it and they can step out of it. And I'm going to piggyback that by saying that a lot of home educated kids, once they reach adulthood and they get older, majority of them end up in work situations where they're working for themselves. and they're actually outside of a cubicle situation or an office situation, and they are making their own income and being responsible for themselves. And a lot of times that happens after a couple of years of being a protege for someone else. But they also, they can have internships when they're 10, 11, 12 years old because they have their day free to do that. So it, life kind of happens sooner for them because we're not on any kind of time constraints. We don't have to wait until we're 18 to become adults. We can open up a business when we're 12 years old. My daughter was 9 and she had her own soap making business. So there's a lot that we can experience about the real world before we graduate from high school and get to taste the real world. It's just really altering your perspective and realizing it. I hope that helps. Like I said, we're short on time. We don't have a lot of time. But, you know, you kind of have to just go. You're just starting right now. Just keep going. Just keep learning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Heather, send me an email at info@loretlynn.com, and I'll send you some resources.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. Sure. Have a good night. We've got just a couple minutes left, and I think that, you know, one of the really important messages that's delivered towards the end of this book is that parents can do this authentic, natural education at home. And I think what's so easy to talk yourself out of in this respect is, I can't do school. And you have a great line in the book, only school can do school, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we talk about young kids being able to start businesses. We did a show back in August where one of the stories that we covered was a boy tried to start a hot dog cart to support his family, and the city shut it down, you know, at the behest of the local restaurant businesses. And these sad stories, they might be somewhat anecdotal, and certainly there's plenty of agorist roots around, you know, complying with all these arbitrary edicts. But yeah, these opportunities do exist, but people have to understand that what they are trying to do with their own families, with their own children, is something very, very distinct from this other institution where you need certificates and you need $17,000 a year for some reason, you know, to make an education, quote unquote, happen. That's not the case, and people really need to get themselves out of that box. Only school can do school. Only the state can do the state. And the state is going to continue these crackdowns on hot dog cart boy. And the state is going to go until the state collapses on itself. But, you know, parents really need to counter that the best they can in every way, every day.
Yep. The whole second half of my book pretty much deals with these questions, these common questions that are brought up. What about socialization? What about the real world? There's an entire chapter on socialization. And I do say that don't try to homeschool, because you can't. You cannot bring school home into your house, and you don't want to anyway.
Mm, exactly. So one more time, the book is Don't Do Drugs, Stay Out of School. And you said that the best way to track this down is at LoretteLynn.com, which people watching the stream see that website.
And the 10% off discount for School Sucks listeners is SSP.
Excellent. Lorette, you familiar with Larkin Rose?
Oh, yeah. My husband's spoken to him several times.
So
sure. I haven't myself, but my husband has, yeah.
He's got a very compact, user-friendly book called The Most Dangerous Superstition, which is a wonderful introduction to some of these ideas about authority and the state. And this book seems to be very similar type of presentation focused on the schools and what education really is. And I recommend it to anybody who has found themselves in numerous frustrating conversations with parents who are trying but are so stuck in conformity and compliance, and they say, I can't. And I think you'd agree that one of the most effective prospects, or the most promising prospects for a book like this, is parents who haven't become dependent on the schooling system yet.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm getting positive feedback from parents that are wanting to pull their kids out of school because they know that their children aren't thriving and they just needed that little extra boost of confidence. But I'm also most buyers are buying it because they haven't entered into the school system yet and they just need somebody to back them up and say, don't do it. Don't go. Also, Brett, and this is interesting, I've had a lot of feedback, more than I would have expected, from teenagers that have bought the book for themselves Reddit and use the information in it to communicate with their parents, to try to convince their parents why school is an unhealthy environment for them, especially the whole bullying issue that is being addressed in a lot of the schools in a very wrong way, in my opinion. They are 12, 13, 14 years old, 16 years old, buying the book, writing to me and saying that it opened up communication dialogue with their parents, which is fantastic. Because that's the whole idea. We have to communicate. We have to learn to communicate with our children and children with parents. And if it's opening up dialogue, whether or not the parents are going for it, I don't know, because they're, you know, they have yet to write back to me and respond to me. So we'll see. But just the fact that they are using it to open up reasonable dialogue with their parents, I was shocked by that. I didn't know that teenagers were buying the book, but I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was great.
Yeah, that's a great story. I'm happy to hear that, because that's a very difficult thing for somebody to even think about doing as a teenager. So it's great to hear that it has that utility. Laurette, thank you so much for being our guest tonight. One more time, lauretteline.com. We'll do this again in the future. We've done it several times in the past. It's always very enjoyable.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you and have a good night. Everybody who is listening to us, hang on. We'll come back in 10 minutes or so. We'll do an After School Sucks special. We got Brian Hagan from Fajita Fun Time joining us. So, give us a few to reset, and we will be back with a little more show. Thank you for listening, and take care.